we present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Welcome again to the first edition of a new series of The News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Advantage weekly advertising paper, read by Peter Donaldson.
Commode chair, £4. Stool, £2.
Thanks to Mr. Perryman of East Grinstead for spotting that one. Let's meet the teams. Please welcome, first on my right, Francis Ween and Fred McCauley. And opposite them on my left, Alan Curran and Linda Smith. Francis, whose poll figures have been pumped out?
Well, I think it might be New Labour. Things are so bad that they're now even more unpopular than William Hague. They're the sort of... he might come up later, Eric the Eel, so I better not mention him, but they are the Eric the Eel of British politics now, except they're not popular. In our absence, a week or so ago, while we were on the Riviera, there was some sort of fuel crisis over here, and the country was held to ransom by a gang of unrepresentative bullies and louts, the cabinet, as I think they're sometimes called. And it's all been, wheels have been coming off ever since. Poor old Blair. Until he can invent a car that runs on hot air, he's completely grounded on hot air. And then all these books come out. Every other day, another book appears, and their poll ratings plummet still further. Molam hates Peter Mandelson because he took a job. Peter Mandelson hates Gordon Brown. For some reason, I don't understand. Gordon Brown hates Blair because he stole my effing budget. And Blair, I don't suppose Blair hates anyone because he's nice, isn't he? He just has to get tough with these bloody protesters. He was marvellous, showed great leadership. He said to them, you can't just go around expecting me to change government policy because a few thousand people stand outside fuel depots. You must do this thing the proper democratic way. Give a donation of £1 million to the Labour Party, and then we'll change the policy. But anyway, it hasn't done him any good. And little Hague is now 5 points ahead in the polls. Incredible.
But the second wave of panic was started by a Welsh DJ. So imagine the power that we've got.
I'm quite astonished by how quickly the veneer of civilization sloughed off in those few days of slight inconvenience, really. 3 days of being quite difficult to get some petrol, and suddenly it's like the siege of Leningrad. No one thinks they can possibly live without 24 loaves of Kingsmill in their hands.
I was watching the Hockenheim Grand Prix, and all I could think of was Formula One. Where did Bernie Ecclestone get the petrol? Who does he know?
Yes, it's New Labour, the party that likes to say no, whose ratings have slid down the polls faster than a greased fireman following the fuel protest last week. While others suffered as the pumps ran dry, William Hague had reason to be pleased at the process. He was still able to get around on any one of his 237 bandwagons. He's promised that the party will greatly reduce the duty on fuel. Typical, one minute you're drinking 14 pints, the next moment you're having a slash in public. Fred, who spied a bit of a dent in the headquarters?
MI6 are ruining letting people know where their headquarters are. They thought it'd be a good idea just to kind of go public on that. And they've paid the price because persons unknown, as far as I'm aware, have fired a missile at MI6's headquarters.
I don't think they were firing at it at all. One thing the world ought to know, probably does know, is that the MI6 building is next to Alembic House. You know that, Simon, where Geoffrey Archer lives. And I thought...
Are you saying he was the victim or the culprit?
I just said to myself, there's a discerning reader out there somewhere.
And I thought it must have been one of Q's gadgets that went wrong. One of those scenes where he says, oh, do pay attention, Bond. And, oh, no, don't touch that button. And because the opening scene of that last Bond film, The World Is Not Enough, I think it was called, is exactly this. There's some people who set off an explosion in the MI6 HQ, and then Bond comes out on this fantastic speedboat straight out. And the building, the MI6 building, was used with the government's permission. In fact, they encouraged it because they thought it would be good for Britain. And then they have this chase down to the other great symbol of Blair's Britain, the Millennium Dome. And the baddies go up on the roof, and Bond has to climb up. That's the only exciting thing ever to happen at the Dome, I think. So MI6 pretty well advertised their presence and said, look, what you can do is come along the river, and then you can attack us, which someone has now done a mere 2 years later.
Yes, absolutely true. Linda, who's been telling Formula One porkies?
Well, this is a subsection of Francis's question, really, isn't it?
This is
about Gordon Brown and Bernie Eccleston, the £1 million that he gave to the Labour Party, which there's some argument about whether Gordon Brown knew about this. And there's a Blair and a Brown camp in Parliament. It's gang warfare, really. The Westminster gangs. You've got your Blairs, you've got your Browns. And they're locked in mortal combat. And the Blairs, you know, they're a steely lot like the Crips and the Bloods. And because when you're a Blair all the way, from your first sun-dried tomato to your last Chardonnay. And so they're on the one side, and they're spreading terrible rumours about Gordon Brown and saying all this Bernie Eccleston thing, that's all his fault. And so his friends are now retaliating, saying, don't you be nasty to our friend. And Tony Blair's saying, well, you started it, and it's going on like this. And I just wish they could solve their problems through song.
Well, the traditional solution in things like West Side Story is for a member of one gang to marry into the other gang, isn't it?
So do you think that's what this antagonism is?
Well, if only Gordon Brown had married Peter Mandelson, none of this would have happened.
Instead of my big cousin Sarah. She's a Macaulay. We're all related.
Yes, I can tell looking at you, actually. Initially, Tony Blair denied receiving money from Ecclestone, but suspicions were aroused when he turned up to the cabinet in a ministerial car plastered with a Durex logo. Alan, listen to this. Alan, which middle-of-the-road guy had clowns to the left of him, headcases to the right this week?
We're left with Kennedy, are we? Yes. I thought he was rather good. I watched Paddy Ashdown kiss him, and I was really moved. I never thought... Yeah, I mean, Kennedy made a serious decision to move the party leftwards by saying everybody earning more than £100,000 will have to pay 50p. I mean, he's raising income tax to 50p. At the same time, he moved rightwards with a couple of sub-social suggestions, right? There's a lot more to that. I mean, you want me to say something about the Lib Dems, that is...
No.
It's jolly hard. I can remember when Charles Kennedy dealt with the serious issues like the news quiz. I mean, that was his métier. He was wonderful on the news quiz, and we've lost him completely.
And he could have a bit of influence on the political life of the country here.
Well, yes. Opinions, and he could say what he felt and what he meant and all that.
But he's,
and now they've put his balls
he's gone
in
off his rocker. There
mouse
was a moment in his speech where he said, when we have a Liberal Democrat government in this country, he suppose this is going to happen in the next year or two. That's why he won't appear on the news quiz anymore. He thinks he's Tony Blair. It's
oh, that's a horrible idea, that there are a lot of people who think they're Tony Blair.
Actually,
that in Parliament,
he thinks he's Gordon
he gets
Brown.
Up and says, I am Tony Blair, and everyone goes, no, I am Tony Blair. No, I am Tony Blair. No, I am Tony Blair.
Correct. 2 points to Alan. Scores at the end of round one are everybody 4 points. We start round two with an item seen in the West Briton.
Entry was forced into a padlocked work store on Friday, July the 28th. A 1.5-ton trailer containing 4 digger buckets was stolen, as were a quantity of petrol-driven tools and mowers, a wheel-driven mower, a sit-on mower, 2 chainsaws, an industrial strimmer, a disc cutter, a Honda petrol generator, a power washer and a Bosch hammer drill. It's thought that the removal of these items would have necessitated the use of a vehicle.
Was beautifully read, I have to say. Very good.
Oh, give him a clap, everybody. You never get that on the Today Show, do you? You never get Humphreys and Lockwood. God, that was good, Peter. Brilliant. Thanks to Audrey and Derek Mercer of Helston, Cornwall for that. Francis, how did the Knights of Camelot win the right to get around the table again?
This is hot news, though by the time you listen to the repeat, it would be rather old news. It's Richard Branson, Sir Richard Branson, I think he's called these days, isn't he?
Not
who's up. Been... He's suddenly found he hasn't got permission to fly over China or some such thing, and he's come crashing down to earth because Camelot has won a judicial review of the Lottery Commissioner's decision announced by Dame Helena Shovelton. Such a lovely name, isn't it?
Shovelton.
But anyway, Dame Helena Shovelton apparently acted illegally
according to Mr. Justice Richards, and the whole thing's got to start again. Months of dispute lie ahead of us, and somehow next year they've got to get a new lottery in town. But I don't care, since I've never bought a lottery ticket, but apparently a lot of people find this distressing, the idea that the lottery tills might grind to a halt and they can't buy their tickets and lose their money every week.
Yes, Camelot has successfully challenged the decision to award the rights in the nation's favourite flutter to Sir Richard Branson's People's Lottery Consortium. Linda, who've got the go-ahead to stop and search?
Ah, of course. The police.
Mm-hmm.
Because only the police have mysterious powers of stop and search. And apparently they've been using their powers for good. this is a report on stop and search, which has been controversial as a means of solving crime in that it doesn't involve any gathering of evidence or suspects, merely the stopping of passers-by. But that old-fashioned finding a suspect does involve time and brains. So they stick with the stop and search. And the findings say that although they're not racist, they're also rude when they stop people, and this annoys people. Well, obviously it annoys them, because no tax on a smile, is there?
The same one, it's not the same one as the Greater Manchester Police report.
Yes,
what's that? It's wonderful. You can't actually, this is not just rudeness, you can't ask a suspect if he's married, because if he's gay, he'd be offended. And you can't say things like, hello, 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 in case he's an OK reader and feels that you've marginalised him. Absolutely balmy. It's hardly worth stopping him, is it?
And you can't refer to pensioners as old biddies and old codgers anymore.
Well, not to their face, case. Probably, no.
When you arrest them, you have to say, all right, you're Nick's sonny, and then it's OK. But it's the whole book they've published on the subject of vocabularies. You know, as if vocabulary is their main problem, and everything will be solved if they just speak politely to people and say, well, you know, would you mind accompanying me to the station? I would rather mind, actually. Oh, please, pretty please. And then, because they ask you so nicely, you go. This is how they're going to run it in future.
Yes, Home Office research suggests that the police are not racist in their use of stop and search, but they are rather rude. The police have admitted in return that it is indeed slightly rude to call someone a black bastard. Guidelines suggest that police should avoid using the phrase wheelchair user until after they've administered a good kicking. 2 points to Linda. Alan, which hawks have got their claws up for the falconer?
Which what?
Hawks have got their claws out for the falconer.
Is this poor old sod who's charged with looking after the dome?
Yes.
They're going to throw the book at him. It's all down to him. Lord Falconer, who is in charge of what remains of that derelict Wen in Greenwich, may be responsible himself because he didn't read the small print, because he's Lord Falconer, not enormously bright. And part of the clause of his contract says if anything goes wrong with the dome, chum, it's your wife, children and the car. And it looks very much as though that when the dome is finally wound down or trodden on or whatever, or sold to the Japanese or set fire to it, whatever they're going to do with it, the bill will be footed by Lord Falconer and his chums.
Hold on a minute.
What?
Does that mean he took on the dome without getting limited liability?
Absolutely. Well, it was only about £9 by that time. And he thought he could do quite well out of it.
God, dear. My brother-in-law's only a builder doing extensions, but he's got limited liability. That's mad. What's the matter with him?
I don't know. Well, your brother-in-law's not in the House of Lords, is he?
Mind you, he might be interested in the scrap value of that dome.
Conservatives are calling for the resignation of the Dome Secretary, Lord Falconer, after last week's report revealing that the Dome is effectively bust. The Dome's manager, Pierre-Yves Gerbault, originally hired from Euro Disney, denied that the public regarded the Greenwich exhibition as a Mickey Mouse project, saying the real problem was most people couldn't give a Donald Duck about it. So the scores at the end of round two are magically everybody 8 points. We start round three with an item spotted in the Chester Standard.
As Chester Cathedral's young choristers mark the end of another singing year, potential new recruits are being sought to audition. The choristers' official year begins again in September. But meanwhile, the girls' choir has a long-standing booking to sin in Amsterdam in August.
But thanks to the many people who spotted that, Francis, who nearly went under, down under, but came up on top.
Oh, is this Sam the Eel?
Yes.
Goody. No, I watched him. He was great. By taking 3 hours to swim 100 metres, He's become the star of the Olympics, because everyone loves a loser. You only have to look at William Hague's poll ratings to see if this is true. And the really astonishing thing, though, about this game is that Britain's doing awfully well as well. I mean, normally we're in the Sam the Eel category. Eric the Eel. But we
you're
normally
get Sam the Sea Lion.
Already the eagle. He's a sort of the eagle figure of William the Hague. But we've actually done, I think we've broken all known records for the number of medals won by a British team, except for our poor judo woman who was disqualified because she was too fat. Apart from that, I think we've won most of the main events, haven't we? There's sort of the junior clay pigeon shooting for left-handers. We did awfully well in the croquet as well. I think we won gold, silver and bronze in that, since no other country plays croquet. One reassuring thing is the one thing Britain has always done well is Tim Henman has lost again.
Yes, they found his egg was welded to the spoon. The other two came second and third to Eric the Eel. They fell in. All these three blokes, one was from Nigeria, one was from Uzbekistan, none of them had seen water before. So they stood by their side of the thing and looked at this blue stuff and said, "What's the blue stuff?" And two of them leaned over and fell in and were disqualified. The third one leaned over and fell in and struggled to the other end. He was wearing the sort of trunks that I used to have. He had these sort of blue woolen trunks. He hadn't done up the drawstring. And everything was rattling around in there like peanuts in a jar. And all the other people are in these amazing double skins with heads and goggles. And this bloke just turned up in these woolly shorts. Give him a medal, I say.
Probably hand knitted.
Watch where you pin it, mind you.
There'd be knitted trunks, remember them?
Oh, I remember those.
That's why the last 15 metres took him so long. They were sodden. They weighed about 3 tonnes by the time he got there.
Except it kept saying that there are no swimming pools more than about 20 metres long in Equatorial Guinea, so he'd had to practice in the sea, shark infested seas off there.
You think he'd swim a lot quicker?
He's not really bored out by his thoughts. Anyway, he's a great hero now. No doubt he's, I mean, like Craig or whatever he's called from Big Brother, he's going to be one of these people who will then have £1 million contract from various modelling agencies and things, and he's made.
It's not quite,
well,
Francis.
Not.
He's getting free goggles for life. I think that's it.
Apparently, in Equatorial Guinea, there are no tellies. So he's not as famous as you might expect because no one knows he's done it. And even his mum was a bit baffled, saying, "Oh, I thought basketball was his favourite sport." So he's a prophet in his own land.
22-year-old Eric Musambani from Equatorial Guinea completed the slowest 100-metre freestyle in Olympic history. After the heat, Eric took the mandatory drug test. There was no trace of the controversial human growth hormone, but he did test positive for Ovaltine and Horlicks. 2 points to Francis. Fred, your piece of music. The Bitterest Pill by The Jam. Fred, how can swallowing a pill keep you in good heart?
An aspirin a day keeps all known heart disease away, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Although I haven't had any today. Because I like to live in the age, me. But, yep, that's it. Aspirin is the cure-all for everything. I don't think it's just the heart disease. Have they not decided it can cure cancer as well?
Oh, yeah.
And the national debt. And they're going to take a whole bucket of them round to the dome and see if they can sort that out.
Of course, it won't help you much in Scotland, Fred, because there it is served deep-fried in batter.
So what you call an aspirin supper.
Aspirin supper with chips.
Yes, a new super aspirin has been developed that could stop up to 3,000 heart attacks in Britain alone every year. Super aspirin make the blood thinner and have been tested successfully for years on Norman Tebbit. 2 points there. Alan, how were Sainsbury's and Comet's names linked in a £25 million deal this week?
Oh, this is another Lord. This is Lord Sainsbury. Here of the plastic bag. And apparently there is something hurtling towards the Earth at 1 billion miles a second. Well, they're doing this all the time. But Lord Sainsbury's going to stop it. There are giant asteroids whizzing around, and everybody's enormously worried that they're going to take the Earth out, and Blair's praying one of them hits the dome, I think. And Lord Sainsbury, just like Lord Faulkner and all these other bizarre people who've been released into the community from the House of Lords and have nothing to do, is going to stand there with a big shopping trolley, and as soon as it's going to catch the asteroid, take it and leave it in a lay-by off the M1.
The very first day of the Lib Dem conference, this Liberal MP gave a press conference saying, let's forget about the fuel crisis and everything, an asteroid is about to destroy the Earth, this is what really matters, and the Lib Dems are going to campaign against it vigorously. We call on the government to take action, and within hours, the government had said it had the thing under control. And
but if Charles Kennedy saw an asteroid coming, would he move to the left or the right? That's
No, that's not the point, Alan. The point is, under proportional representation, that would land on Mars.
A three-man team set up by Lord Sainsbury hopes to combat the threat of asteroids and comets coming from outer space. The consequences of an asteroid hitting the Earth could be immense. Even a tiny meteor landing on a city such as Luton could cause millions of pounds worth of improvements. Linda, why does the latest Forsyth saga have a chance of netting a large audience?
It's Frederick Forsyth.
Oh, of course, it's Frederick Forsyth. Did everyone hear that? Was that just a voice in my head? And I'm guessing just from the structure of your question that it's to do with this book being on the internet.
It is.
What's the point of it? Because you couldn't read them on the plane. It can't be an airport novel, can it? It's great big carousels full of computers. That's no good, is it? You can read it on the train. Certainly not on a Virgin train. There's not room for your legs, let alone a... Oh, I think it's a daft idea.
Well, I don't know. It's nice to think that a lot of trees won't be cut down to manufacture Freddie Forsyth stuff.
I've got sons who I think they're on the internet enough. I don't want them reading novels on the internet. And as far as I'm concerned, the internet's only good for one thing, and that's it's taught them how to use the mouse with the left hand.
Alan, who proved to be a truly astounding member of the aquatic world.
This is the ruddy duck.
It is.
Now, the ruddy duck is interfering with all sorts of other ducks. It doesn't really want to, but the other ducks queue up. All female. It's actually a ruddy drake. And all the other ducks, white ducks, all kinds of ducks, queue up and say things like, I suppose a duck will be out of the question. It is the most desirable duck in the world, and nobody knew why, because ornithologists don't get out a lot, and I could have told them. The thing is, the ruddy duck has a ruddy dick, has an 8-inch... I didn't know they had them at all. I mean, you can't see them in the water, really. I mean, I suppose they're under the waterline, but this one hangs down between his webbed feet, and at moment of intense excitement, it goes off like an exocet. It's contaminating all the other... What, contaminating? I don't know. It just has a good night out. But it is... But every other duck in Britain is in danger of being impregnated, and they're all becoming slightly ruddy. He puts the roses in their cheeks, I suppose. But, yes, it's the ruddy duck that they found it with an enormous wang.
You'd think the cold water would affect it, really. I suppose it's benefited from global warming.
Yes. I think Eric the Eel was looking a bit shriveled after 4 hours in the pool.
That's when ducks always put their head under the water. So you have a look at that. And the ruddy duck was the only one that was doing backstroke, right?
Amazingly, it's shaped like a corkscrew.
So you can say, after you, I'm having a bottle of wine.
Scientists say they first began speculating about the enormous size of the ruddy duck's equipment when they realised they'd never seen one driving a Porsche. A And before we reveal the final thrilling scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
Simon, this is from The Guardian. It's an article about artificial insemination, referring to sperm donors. Everyone cites the acute shortage in Scotland, where one man is single-handedly producing Glasgow's supplies.
Come in, ruddy duck, come in. Fred.
This is from Anne Tippett, and I have to kind of read it out in reverse. This is an advertisement for a job from Warwickshire College, and it gives a description of the job, and then in italics at the bottom says, audio cassette version of the job description and person specification are available for applicants with impaired vision, because, you know, they don't want to discriminate. However, the fact that it's for a college minibus driver may be a problem.
Linda.
I've got a cutting here sent in by Ruth Scott from The Times. Image problem. A policeman knocked himself out when he mistook his own reflection for a burglar. The officer was searching a menswear shop in Wirral, Merseyside, when he thought he saw a figure approaching. He tried a rugby tackle and hit a long mirror head first.
Alan.
Well, I'm rather loath to do this one on Ruddy Duck Day, Simon, but it was in Wednesday's Daily Mail. We picked it up from the Washington Post. It says, 22-year-old Patrick Lawrence of Dacula, Georgia, was apprehended by police for making love to a pumpkin he had amended for this purpose. Asked by police why he was molesting a pumpkin, Lawrence replied, pumpkin? Damn, is it midnight already?
Thank you all. Now let's look at the final score. It's wonderful that for our first week back, everybody is equal on 16 points. Let me leave you with a cutting from The Guardian, sent in by Audrey Bland of Prudhoe.
Sad news from Berlin, where Heidi Berger has filed for divorce, citing insufficient coupling. Hans is a good man, but worn out, said 100-year-old Heidi.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Francis Green, Linda Smith and Fred McCauley. The chairman was Simon Hoggett and the news was read by me, Peter Donaldson. The chairman's script was written by George Poles, Debbie Barham and Simon Littlefield, and the producer was Lucy Armitage.